When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the All-NBA Show, part of the All-City Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam Matez, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, Tim Legler, from an undisclosed hotel location. Legs, how are you doing?
Right. That's right, man. We keep this on the DL, man. We don't want anybody to know where I'm at in case I say something, you know, to offend, you know, one of these fans or one of these teams. Y'all don't want them to be able to track me down. I'm good, man. I'm ready to go.
I think you're going to say nice things about the Knicks, because let's be honest, it'd be Knicks fans that would track you down. But today it's all sunshine and rainbows for the Knicks. We're going to get into them. They're going to be our top story today as we break down that game. I'm probably going to hit Legs with way too much Isaiah Hartenstein hype. He'll have to calm me down a little bit. We're going to talk about the Timberwolves as well and set the stage for the Wolves-Nuggets game tonight, which is this is the time of the season where these games start to really mean something. Tonight is one of those games. Nuggets-Timberwolves, we'll break all of that down. But first, we are presented, as always, by DraftKings Fantasy Sports. You want to listen? Because later on in the show, you're going to be hearing about some of the deals that they have to offer. DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, let's start with our top story, Legs. The Knicks, on the road for a West Coast road trip, get their third straight win. They go out on the West. You really think they're going to be tested here? This is where you're going to find out just how good you could be. They beat Sacramento. They beat Portland. Now they get the Warriors, and they do it in impressive fashion. There's a lot of notes from this game from me, but what stood out to you about this one?
I think the reason it was so impressive to me, because the Golden State Warriors just could not stop the Knicks when they had to stop them. And you know, this got to a point where it was one possession game. Warriors made a run. They're at home. They've been very. They haven't been very good at home at all. They're basically a 500 team at home, which is really shocking. You think about how dominant they've been on that home court in the Steph Curry era, and they were basically a 500 team. So I don't know. Being at home really mattered to them that much, but they did make the run, got the crowd into it. It's an important game for them, clearly, and then they just could not get a stop when they had to. The Knicks controlled it, and really it was Brunson. And he's just every night I watch him, Adam, I'm more impressed with the fact that, you know, when you look at these top guys in the league and the guys that we talk about for MVP and guys like Jokic and guys like Luka and guys like LeBron and the way that they control the game. And Jalen Brunson is really kind of in that category in terms of the ball's in his hands, right? Yeah. You can't affect them. You don't get them off balance. You don't get him into tight spots. He doesn't jam himself up. And it's all done differently. It's done through strength and footwork and IQ. And he's got a very, very soft touch on the move that he's able to withstand sort of that contact and still finish plays and get strong shots up at the rim when he has to have it. So that, for me, was the most impressive thing. That's the Knicks, you know, the way that they were able to continue to get baskets when they had to just stiff-arm Golden State and keep them in, you know, that 6-8 point deficit, like the whole fourth quarter, and the Warriors just could not crack the code. And for me, that was very impressive for the Knicks, who are still playing, obviously, not at full strength.
Right. Brunson's incredible. 34 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, and a steal. 12 of 25. I mean, first of all, the 25 shots are a necessity. The ball's in his hands. They need him to stir things up, so it's not like he's out there chucking. But to your point, the ability to have that high of a usage and to be that refined and that, you know, throw different coverages at him, try to blitz, try to do different things, and he still handles it. And the reason he handled it so well last night, I thought the game was the first quarter. the rest of the game, you kind of play out. There was runs on each side. But the first quarter, and really to start the game, the Knicks make a really unique decision. They start Miles McBride. He plays 47 minutes, by the way, and plays phenomenally. These two teams played each other a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago. And I believe, who was it that started for them? Was it Precious Achiuwa, I think, that started that night? And Golden State made the decision not to guard him. All right, we have one guy we don't have to guard at the four. Kuminga's going to be a roamer. He's going to be playing, you know, inside. And it mucked things up. The Knicks make an adjustment tonight. They go really small against a team that, by the way, is known for playing small. The Warriors want to play small. That's their MO. You go even smaller, but you give an extra shooter. And I just thought that was a great adjustment, because this is why I'm impressed with the Knicks. They're winning with multiple styles right now, Legs. They can play a grinded out game. They can play the defensive game. They can play big. And then last night against the small ball, you know, creators, they go small like that. And Miles McBride has the game a career night. He was ready for it. But also it just provided that extra spacing so that Jalen Brunson, first of all, gave another ball handler. So Jalen Brunson can attack with a spread court and make plays. And Miles McBride goes 6 of 9 from three.
Yeah, and it was clear. Look, Miles McBride was ready for the moment, and they asked Jalen Brunson about that after the game. He had some really nice things to say about him, and he's putting the work in every day. Like, he's grinding it out. He's trying to continue, you know, to get better, make a splash, right? That's all you really want to do when you're a young player like Miles McBride, just cement yourself, prove to people you can play. So he was ready for the moment. The Warriors were not ready for Miles McBride. And for the impact that he had, it was obvious that he just wasn't a priority. And I don't blame them. You got other things to worry about with the Knicks. You got to keep him off the offensive glass. You got to deal with Brunson and all the different ways that he hurts you. Because Brunson is very unique in that when you come up with a defensive game plan against any player, a primary ball handler, everything you do in your walkthrough, your film session, everything you do, every set, everything is predicated on, okay, when the ball's here, here's how we're going to play it. When he comes off, you know, the high ball screen or side ball screen, whatever it may be, this is how we're going to play it. And Brunson has this uncanny ability to take the basketball in places where he escapes that area that's about to be set up to enact a game plan. And he changes up and he goes a different direction. And sometimes he'll do multiple inside out dribbles in the same possession and just has people so off balance all the time. So Brunson was able to operate effectively around whatever game plan was designed for him. And it was obvious they had no priority paid to Miles McBride at all. And why would you? I don't blame him either. Right. And he tuned them up, man. He got going early. It gave their offense a much needed boost at the start, and it carried it throughout, really. And then they put the ball in the hands of Brunson in the fourth quarter and just said, go take this thing, possession by possession, control the pace. And let's just bring this thing home. And that's what Brunson did at the end of the game. But McBride was sensational in the first half, and the Golden State Warriors were caught completely unaware that Miles McBride was about to, you know, have that kind of a game against them. They just weren't ready for that kind of impact and that kind of aggressiveness with his shot taking, which you know, he was hunting. He had a couple, and then he was seeking those things out. And Golden State, that was not part of the game plan. I don't know if his name was even written on that whiteboard in their locker room.
I don't know if it was. He, by the way, because you're right that most of the damage was done in the first quarter with him, but he also had a dagger three. I think they're up 6 points with about 3 minutes to go. It wasn't really a true dagger, but up six with 3 minutes to go versus up nine with 3 minutes to go is a huge difference. That pretty much puts you at a near certainty. And he had a huge shot in isolation. I think it was Draymond Green. It was either Kuminga or Draymond Green that he hit it over. So again, there is a toughness to this Knicks team. And when I see young players, and by the way, I got to shout out the Knicks front office here. You remember they make the Quickly trade, they get rid of him, and they immediately extend Miles McBride. I can't remember what the terms of that deal were, but it's ridiculous. It was an unbelievable deal. Yeah. And it's one of those things where they knew what they had, and they knew if you play out the season, McBride's probably going to cost even more money. They make the Quickly trade. They say, okay, now we're going to depend on this guy for more minutes. He's ready for it. Here's an offer. And now you look at that. I think it's a three-year deal. It's a steal that they have this guy the way he's been playing since that trade, you know, and they basically have him on this like minimum deal. So he's been unbelievable, that starting lineup. But here's one other thing that I like about what he does, because this Knicks team, they're so good defensively. If you have questions about him, it's what offensively, what can they do, especially without Randall? The spacing is a big thing. When you have McBride out there in the first half, they put Brunson off ball a lot. And it wasn't even just McBride. There was Dante DiVincenzo sometimes would be the initiator. And what they would do is McBride has the ball, so he has gravity because he can shoot, but also he has the ball in his hands. You put somebody else, maybe DiVincenzo, in one quarter, and you run a little pin down for Brunson with Hartenstein. And it's, instead of it being a pick and roll, it's almost like a pin down and roll. So Brunson's coming off, catching the pass, and Hartenstein's rolling. Now you have shooters everywhere. You're already in, like, by the time the defense knows what's happening, you're already halfway into rotation. And they did that a lot and got Hartenstein on the roll. And I just felt like when you watch that, you're like, man, Brunson's hard enough in pick and roll. But when you start having to, like, run him off of screens and he's going right into his action, it's almost impossible. I love that from the Knicks last night.
Yeah, I love that too. And I also think, you know, more teams could maybe take advantage of that mentality because I also think it preserves guys' legs a little bit more throughout the game. I mean, it's a grind to have to be the guy that's, you know, every possession you're on the court, bringing that thing up to court. And in some cases, you're meeting some primary defender right over half court. And, you know, they're not really affecting you that much, but it's still, you got to be cognizant of it. So you're protecting the ball and you got to work a little harder to get the ball where you want to start the action. All that stuff wears on you over time. So when you can put somebody down on the baseline or put them on the block and bring them up off a pin down and take some of that initial ball handling pressure off their plate, I just think it makes you more versatile. I also think it preserves you better throughout the game. So that Brunson could be a little bit fresher when he has to be late, which he clearly was, because he just got to spot after spot late when he needed to, whether it was the foul line or getting to, you know, his and one or a short pull-up game. You know, ball was in his hands pretty much every trip late in the game when he closed it out.
And so I want to get to this action again, because the two guys that I just am in love with on the Knicks roster are Josh Hart, who had a triple-double last night, 10 points, 11 rebounds, 11 assists, and Isaiah Hartenstein, 13 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. What they have is two guys who are, in my opinion, phenomenal secondary playmakers. So you have Jalen Brunson, who's your primary playmaker. Those two guys are such great connectors, and Hartenstein in particular, you get those pin downs and you get those pick and rolls. Passing to him on the short roll, I think this is going to sound crazy, top 3 or 4 center in the NBA at making decisions out of that short roll, in my opinion. He's that good at it. He can finish. He has the athleticism. His touch is a little bit hit or miss, but he makes passes. He has good vision and good touch on the passes. And Hart is used that way as well. Guard to guard screen. He kind of rolls and then makes the extra play. You have two guys to me where it's like the best bet against Brunson is the same against Luka. You want to trap him. You want to jump out and get the ball out of their hands. They have two guys they go to that just kill you when you trap Brunson. And to me, that's the checkmate piece to sort of allow them to play the way they need to play to get points on offense.
I agree. And look, we've made a lot about the Knicks injuries and talked a lot about Mitchell Robinson. He's been out a long time and waiting for him to come back. And he's a massive difference maker on the offensive glass. But Hartenstein is an equally effective difference maker. You know, he doesn't necessarily you know, do it quite like Mitchell Robinson does, but he is so effective. You trust him so much. Anytime he's going to put his hands on the basketball in the paint on a roll or a touch, or he gets an offensive rebound, he just has a very good feel and instincts for what to do. He's got super high energy. And Josh, to your point about Josh Hart, not only does he play 47 minutes, 48 minutes, whatever 48, it was, 48, yeah. 48, played the whole game. He's playing harder than anybody else out there. Yeah. Like, that's the thing that doesn't make sense. Like, you could clearly get guys to play 48 minutes in a game. A lot of guys could do that. But guess what? They take a lot of plays off in order to be able to do that. And Josh Hart doesn't take any plays off. He is averaging 14 rebounds a game in his last 5 games for basically a 6'5 two guard. Have that kind of a weapon as a rebounder at the guard spot is so important to your team defense, because what it means is when you have Hartenstein, who's going to be very active back there trying to clog lane and meet guys at the rim on penetration, and how often do you see shot blockers or last line of defense go try to get somebody on a drive, and now their man slips in and picks up the easy trash off the offensive glass because nobody's sunk down. Look at the number of Josh Hart in the course of a game. When he's getting these rebounds, there are plays in which he has sunk down and put his backside into an opposing big and comes up with those balls. And very few teams have a weapon like that at the guard spot that's coming from the top of the floor down into the paint to clean up those defensive rebounds, because that is how you finish off defensive possessions. And it's a huge part of team defense. You know, We talk about defensive rating all the time. Well, a big part of that is securing the glass at the end of it. And that's what Josh Hart helps you do at a level like few people in this league do. And it's a weapon for Tom Thibodeau. And yeah. I just don't know if I've seen rebounding numbers like this out of a guard his size in a really long time.
A guy plays so incredibly hard. 48 minutes, though, it's almost cliche to talk about. This is what Tibbs does. He plays his guys. Yeah. McBride played 47 minutes. First of all, you're starting, and then you play 47 minutes. Not only are you starting, but, hey, tonight I need you to play basically the whole game. And then Hart plays 48. Now, only 35 for Brunson, 31 for DiVincenzo. So it really was two role players that were playing those extended minutes, and you're not worried about Miles McBride's wear and tear. I think you're okay with that. But Josh Hart, 48 minutes when he plays that hard. As much as I love it, I understand why people look at that with a bit of a side eye and say, what are we doing? What are we doing? Yeah. It's March. 48 yeah. minutes.
Not only is it March, it's modern NBA, man. What are we talking about here? Like dudes don't play those kind of minutes. You can go back and go on Basketball Reference and just pull up, any players from previous generations, and you're going to be shocked at like some of the average minutes played per game for some of these guys and the number of games played total. Well, that's not where we're at in the NBA. We're about preservation at all costs. Like, that's the number one thing on teams' minds is keeping guys' legs fresh. And that means you get nights off with load management. That means you take a little longer when you come back from an injury. It also means you're not playing, north of 40 minutes ever. And here you got Tibbs running a couple guys out there for basically the entire game. And it's not the first time he's done that. So you're right. It's completely different. I think what Tibbs is figuring is that, look, this is a really critical stretch right now for them. And they're positioning in the East. And they've got, hopefully, help coming. And they're going to get closer to full strength. But last night, Golden State played twice as many minutes off the bench as the Knicks. The Knicks played like 54 minutes, something like that, with their bench players. The Warriors were like 112, 113, so more than twice as many minutes. And that's normal for teams. Right. And what the Knicks did last night was not. But I just think right now, and this is what Tibbs does, and he did it in Chicago too, he has a tendency to like look at the moment and kind of put all that to the side and say, no, we got a chance to win a game. We're going to go win a game. And these are important for us right now. And we'll figure that stuff out later with guys maybe being run into the ground a little bit. I don't think he's that concerned. And if Josh Hart didn't give him the indication that, hey, you could play the entire game and I'm still going to play harder than anybody out here, if he didn't respond in that way, Tibbs wouldn't do it to him. He trusts Josh Hart that he could do this to him, and he's still going to be just as effective in the next game or throughout the entire game that he just played.
And I think one of the reasons that he specifically plays so many minutes is he is one of the few players on the roster that fills the hole that we're talking about here. If you can trap Brunson and you don't have those connectors on the court, well, you're vulnerable, because now it's like, okay, you're a team can risk the trap, but you're not having to pay for it. He's one of those guys that when he's on the court, okay, he can make you pay for it, in addition to being a great rebounder, great defender, and everything else. So I think that they're kind of – I don't expect those minutes to, like, massively drop off. I think Josh Hart is going to lead the NBA in minutes here down the home stretch or down the stretch of the season because they need him so bad. And that's one thing that I think you would concern yourself with if you're a Knicks fan. The other thing is – and I don't – this is more a high concept thing about the Knicks I want to ask you about. The difference between the regular season and the playoffs, in part, can be minutes that your starters play. And it also could be how much you're making adjustments and how hard you're playing. I love this Knicks team, but if I have one question about them, it would be they're one of the only, if the only team in the NBA in fifth gear in the regular season. I think there is a sixth gear. But you look at a lot of your teams, like, say, a Boston or a Denver, I think they're in third gear, and they're going to push to sixth gear. Do you kind of agree with that, that the Knicks are probably closer to their playoff energy and effort than most teams are, and maybe that's makes it hard to predict what they're going to look like in the postseason?
I do think that's true, but I also think it's not like they just now kind of discovered that gear. That's kind of how the Knicks play all year. And the reason that I've admired them all season is because a lot of good things happen to you when you just play harder than the guys lined up in front of you. And that's pretty much describes the Knicks every single night. So that I think that's part of just what their identity, what they thrive in, is being that type of team. They take great pride in that. And Thibodeau knows he can push this particular group, and they want certain guys with certain levels of mental and physical toughness to make up their identity. And that's what they're building toward. And I don't think this is something that's new, like right now, that they're thinking about this because they've had some injuries and they don't want to fall anywhere in the standings. This, I think that this has been their identity all year, that they just play harder than other teams do most nights. I mean, you contrast what the Knicks look like on an average night, like what they looked like last night from an effort standpoint, and then look at the Phoenix Suns on Sunday against the Bucks. because that was disgusting to me to watch a team that seemed that disinterested in playing basketball. And the extent to which they just became so demoralized and defeated so quickly in that game. By the way, remind people, Giannis wasn't even playing. Yeah, and you gave up 140 points. And I'm just saying, like, so, and I'm not saying that that's typical either for the league, but guess what? You got nights like that sprinkled all throughout the regular season with all of these teams we're talking about, not the Knicks. You know, you just don't watch the Knicks ever and go like, man, you know, they must have been tired. They just didn't have it tonight. And I think that's what they really take a lot of pride in, pushing yourself through the boundaries of fatigue and just absolutely having more will so that you will buckle before we will. You're going to have to kill us to stop us. And eventually that will wear you down in the course of a game. And I just think that's part of what they want to be. And I think they embrace it.
Yeah. The only other note I have on the Knicks side of things, we'll get to the Warriors here in a second. The only other note I have, and it was about Hartenstein. I forgot to bring this up. One of the things that I like about him is he can protect the rim. He's long. He's good there. But he also moves his feet on the perimeter. It's not like he's a shutdown. He's not Bam Adebayo. But he's also, you know, not a sieve. He's not out there on the perimeter and you're like, oh my God, we're so compromised. He can play positionally and gets his hands out. He plays hard. So that's another thing about him that I think he provides this team that is so essential. And I think it's interesting that they don't play him that many minutes, by the way. He's always 25 minutes a night, even though he's this valuable. Do you have any final thoughts either about Hartenstein or just about the Knicks in general before we move on?
No, I think with Hartenstein, I think I agree with you. When I watch him play, it's kind of like you're watching a guy that maybe more than any other player in the NBA is absolutely getting every single ounce out of what they have physically on every single trip. He's so demonstrative with his arms and his feet, his body language, his pointing, his gesturing, just the way he plays. And I just think that that is infectious for your team. And people respond to that, and the fan base responds to it. And it's worth more than just that one stat that he's providing you in that moment. It's worth more to your team what he provides. Look, we both are very high on the Knicks. I admire them a great deal. I think, you know, you and I were talking like, you know, do you believe in the Knicks? I think that's a difficult word. I'm not sure how much I believe in any of these teams right now outside of Boston in the Eastern Conference. Because if you were to put all those teams, Adam, names in a hat in the East besides the Celtics, and I were to pull one out, they have 5-6 teams that we can name, I could make a really good argument why this is the team that will end up playing the Celtics in the conference finals. I can also make an argument to say why this is going to be their death knell, like this aspect of their team. This is a problem for them. And I feel like they're all like that. So it's really going to be interesting to see how this last few weeks plays out in the regular season, what the matchups end up being. And all of these teams, if they can just avoid Boston's bracket, have a legitimate shot to be the last team standing against the Celtics. And I think the Knicks are in that category. You know, even without Julius Randle, I think they've got a shot because of the fact that they wear you down over the course of a game.
Yeah. And by the way, getting this one done without OG, he's another one. I actually had one last note, and that is lineups that feature Hartenstein and OG Anunoby, three, what I would consider they're like three X factor players. They have a plus 32.4 net in 155 minutes. It's a small sample size, but an 82 defensive rating with those three lockdown defensive hustlers. Like all three of those guys, you're getting a lot of defensive energy from them. And the fact that that defensive rating is 82, that's insane. And I just want to see more minutes. You're right about the Randle piece, but there is a part of me that looks at this and goes, I don't know, though. I kind of like this version of them. I kind of like how versatile they are when they have this group. So I'm excited to see them. If we go to the other side, the Warriors have lost four of their last five at home. We talked about belief. I just don't know what to make of this, because these games were the point where they could make up and maybe try to move up to that 8 or 9, at least get a home court in one of those play-in games. And instead, you know, they keep losing games that you kind of pencil them in to win. So what did you see from them, and how discouraged are you from this loss?
This is a pretty discouraging loss for them, because look, we just raved about some of the qualities we love about the Knicks, but the bottom line is the Knicks, as currently constituted, are not necessarily like a team with immense firepower, right? And this is a really important game for Golden State. Too many guys played poorly last night. Too many. I mean, you can't have Andrew Wiggins and Draymond Green basically completely not show up offensively and give you nothing. Pajemski goes 0-for-2. These are three really important guys. Like, probably two of those three guys need to get you like 14 and up to help out what Curry gives you. And Klay Thompson actually had a decent game last night. Didn't shoot particularly well, but was active, had some great passes. His playmaking has come a long way. And he really was finding
8 assists.
Yeah, and Trayce Jackson-Davis, he was really connecting with him in a number of ways and doing other things when his shot wasn't going in. And I think that's something that Clay's sort of finding at this stage of his career. Chris Paul played pretty well last night, so that was a little bit of a boost. But you just can't have that many guys play that poorly offensively where you don't notice them for the entire game. So, it was frustrating, I think, for Steve Kerr, who never saw the run that he was expecting to see, where this was really going to get tight. And at some point, you'd figure they would take the lead in the second half of this game. At some point, you would lead at home against the Knicks right now. And they just never got into that position. And for the Knicks, it was very methodical the way they went about closing that game out. And they got hurt on the offensive glass again, Golden State, which has been a massive problem for them late in games. When they do a decent job contesting the initial shot and having a good quality defensive possession, and then you don't secure the defensive rebound. And now you got to play defense for like 40 seconds. And at the end of that, they're scoring. That's so demoralizing. And we saw that in the fourth quarter of this game as well. So definitely discouraging for the Warriors that just cannot seem to string anything together. It's very much a night-by-night basis for the Golden State Warriors, what you're about to see, which is going to make a play-in very interesting because, hey, if they have one of those nights, you know they're capable of winning a game. I don't know if they get out of the play-in, but they are absolutely a team. When the ball goes up in the air, Adam, I have no idea what I'm about to watch from them offensively.
You mentioned the rebounding. We talk about their size. Oh, they're so small. When they go up against the big teams, you worry they're going to get bullied inside. Well, this was an example of a team being small, but their size still standing out to me because you're in rotation a lot. You add the extra shooter, and they just don't have a lot of length on closeouts. You know, so I think that was another part of this where you look at it and go, when they play a big team, they're going to be undersized. But if they play a stretch out team, you're closing out with Pajemski and Steph Curry and some of these guys, and that's tough. And the other thing that I think is tough for them is, we talked about Klay Thompson going to the bench. Trayce Jackson-Davis have been playing very, very well. Gary Payton's a guy I love. And ahead of them, you have Wiggins and Pajemski, who deserve to be in those roles. But when it's close, when your fourth or fifth options and your starting lineup are very close to your fifth and sixth guys on your roster, that can create confusion about how you should play every game. And you don't want to go back and forth every game. You're doing something different. And last night was a night where Klay, Payton, Trayce Jackson-Davis, I thought those guys were great. And then Wiggins, Pajemski, not great. And so it's one of those ones where that's just something that they're going to have an identity problem, I think, about you're always going to have to play your starters, but your starters probably don't always deserve it.
That's such a good point. And I think, look, it makes it difficult for a head coach. Like I feel for Steve Kerr because the last thing you want going into a game is to have that many buttons that you might have to push. Because on a given night, like you know, you got 10, 11 guys – you don't know where else it's coming from. And you've got to feel each game separately. And there's no continuity there. There's no consistency whatsoever. And the problem for them all year really has been just too many guys below their career norm. I mean, when you put a roster together, you're kind of basing it on what these guys have done historically in their careers. Like that's how you figure what you have in front of you. And then you're always hoping a couple of the younger guys can grow throughout the season and add to the mix. But your core, your 7 or 8 guys, like, you know, going in, this is going to be our top 7 or 8 guys in terms of minutes. You know, you want to have some consistency there in terms of production, and they just haven't had it all year. And so for Kerr, It starts middle of the first quarter, or sometimes before the game. He's thinking about, well, maybe we mix it up tonight with the starting lineup. And then, you know, 8 minutes in, he's already thinking about, oh, man, he doesn't have it tonight, or this is a bad matchup, or whatever it may be. And that's not always a good thing to have to do that. You want to just kind of roll it out there at the start. I know what this is going to – now, don't get me wrong. Guys fluctuate sometimes, but not to the extent that these guys have. And that's why most people now looking at the Warriors – it's very hard to envision them really doing anything, even if they escaped the play-in, winning a round, unless they caught a team that was shorthanded and make it real interesting because of the Curry effect. But I think it's just a reach anymore. Steph's going to be able to do it to that extent, Adam.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. You know what Kerr's got to learn? He's got to watch more Thibodeau. 48 minutes for Steph, man. Come on. That's how you solve the rotation.
You remember the days I would scream at Kerr at the television or whatever. Ian and I even talked about this. Like, do you remember there was his? So every star player like sort of has their substitution pattern that they like.
Yep.
Some guys like to play the whole third and sit out a chunk of the fourth. You know, a lot of guys like, hey, you know, let me come out the last 3 minutes of the third. I'll sit the first 2 minutes of the fourth, maybe 3 minutes of the fourth. And then I'm out there for the last 9-10 minutes of the game and the first 9-10 of the third quarter. Remember with Steph? He would sit the first 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. And this, and by the way, this was when they were like winning championships. Right. And it'd be nights where, I mean, it's precarious. Like some of these games are hanging in the balance and you're sitting there waiting. You keep looking at the bench like, is he going to get up? Is he going to get up? Like they just had an 8-0 run and Curry's just sitting over there chilling. And they stuck with it. The script. They stuck to that script no matter what. It takes an incredible amount of discipline to do that. But maybe you're right. In this situation, hey, maybe you go ahead and say, you know what? He doesn't have that many years left anyway. Let's just go ahead and run him into the ground. Steph, you're playing 48 tonight, you know, and every night, the rest of the season. Obviously, we're joking about that. But I think for Kerr, he'd love to be able to do that. He would wear Steph down to play, you know, 40 plus every night because he's just not built that way. Physically, like to be able to do that. That would be very difficult for him to do. Kerr wishes he didn't have to even think like that because he was getting more consistent production from other guys that are filling those minutes, and he's just not.
All right, let's take a break, man. We spent half the show on Knicks and Warriors, rightfully so. Fun game, and I'm just kind of in love with this Knicks team. I keep going around the league, Legs. You notice this. I keep going around. I had the Pelicans for a while, the Mavs for a while. I'm back on the Knicks. I think this is my second date with the Knicks.
Basically. I'm gonna get you an Isaiah Hartenstein jersey. By the way, I want you to wear.
I would wear it with pride. Are you kidding?
We gotta make that happen. Yeah,
we'll make it happen. On the other side, we'll talk about the Timberwolves and set the stage for this Nuggets Wolves matchup coming up. But first, this episode is brought to you by the Spring Cleaning Champions of the World. That's of course Manscaped. This season, make sure to groom your carpets and the drapes with the leaders in below the waist grooming. Having a hard time with this one today. Clear out that winter bush with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and watch your confidence bloom like springtime flowers. They've got this new package that comes not only with the Lawnmower 5.0, but it's got a bunch of adjustable trimmers in different sizes so you can tailor whatever look it is you're going for. Right now, you get 20% off free shipping with the code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code ALLNBA at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning for you men out there. Also want to tell you guys about DraftKings Sportsbook, the thrill and excitement. This is the best week. I haven't even talked to Legs about this. I got to talk to him on the other side. The best week of sports of the entire year is upon us. Not only do we have great NBA games, but March Madness is here. DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook app, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. And I'm telling you, I'm betting on I'll probably make a bet on DraftKings on every single game for the 4 days of the first weekend. It'll probably be a small bet, but you put a little action on every single game, and now you're hanging on the balance, especially when you look at those lopsided ones. You bet on the spread, and then every game feels like it has a buzzer beater. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code ALLNBA. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code ALLNBA. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, back here, segment two of the All-NBA podcast. Thanks for watching along. If you're watching on YouTube live, make sure to hit that like button. If you're not watching it live, hit that like button and leave a comment below. Let us know what you think of the show and give us one of your takes on the Knicks or the Warriors. We're going to move on now to talk about the Timberwolves, who last night, very strange game. You're playing the tanking Jazz for the second time in a row. They had those two games in 3 days against the Jazz in Salt Lake. And this one, you're without Rudy Gobert to start, and then you lose Naz Reid halfway through it. So you're going to have to be playing, obviously, cats out. You're the team that's biggest in the NBA all of a sudden finds themselves having to play small. And how did they do? Well, they did phenomenally, thanks in part to Anthony Edwards, who goes for 32.7 rebounds, 8 assists, and the dunk of the year. Easily, I think, the dunk of the year, a poster over John Collins. Legs, what'd you think of the dunk? What'd you think of the game?
Yeah, dunk. So we watch games every night, Adam, and sometimes we watch games the next morning too, and you know, and catch up, right? So I don't know. We see a lot of games, put it that way. And there's probably maybe five moments a year where you're watching a game and you just inadvertently, without even controlling it, just blurt out something like oh, you know, one of those. And that's kind of what I did on this one. And I agree, it was the dunk of the year. The way the play developed was interesting because, you know, poor John Collins, and you know, we hope he's okay. He suffered a concussion on this play. He's got great bounce. I mean, John Collins has done some things in his career that, you know, make these highlight reels, right? So he can really get up. And you can just see it. I've watched the replay, I don't know how many times, 15 probably. I did a touch screen on it this morning on ESPN. But you can see as he's running back, he's kind of looking all over the place because there's a shooter running to the right corner. There's somebody running on the left side. His head's kind of on a swivel. And then finally, he gets back to the paint and turns around. And he's kind of in a relaxed position. And one foot's in the restricted area. And he's looking at Anthony Edwards coming right out of it. You could just literally see the thought bubble is kind of like, should I or shouldn't I? He jumped and he immediately kind of ducked his head because he realized that there was just too much runway for Anthony Edwards and too much explosive power with that free run at it. Now, what's amazing about the dunk is like where the contact takes place and where he jumps from, like to be able to continue your forward momentum and your vertical momentum through all that contact and still finish the way that he did that high above the rim. It's incredible. Like in a league full of great athletes, there you have Anthony Edwards, right, who does some stuff that's pretty singular to him. And look, whether we want to debate his best dunk ever, because we got some candidates in there, man. He's had some moments. I'll take his word for it, Adam. He said it after the game. That's the best dunk of my career. So I'm going to take his word for it. If a dunker on that level says that, I'm going to listen to him. So we're going to go ahead and crown that as Anthony Edwards' most memorable play of his career to this point.
There you go, man. And he even gets the offhand. Like, he hurt his finger. John Collins being hurt, I think, for real hurt. You don't want to go out. You know this, Legs. You get dunked on.
Yeah.
It's hard to go out of the game after that because that makes it almost worse. Oh, yeah. You know, that's like getting knocked out. But, you know, you watch the replay, and he hit him as hard in the head with his offhand that it hurt a finger. So you know that contact was tough. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that the best thing maybe that could happen to John Collins, honestly, is so he was diagnosed with a concussion. Maybe he just has 4 seconds of his memory completely erased. maybe that's the symptom he ends up with, because I think that would be the best thing for John Collins. Unfortunately for him, this is going to live on, man, for a long time. Like, you're going to be watching the replay of this dunk for years and years to come, really throughout his career. When Anthony Edwards one day is, you know, maybe gets an MVP, maybe retires and he's going to be a Hall of Famer, his Hall of Fame induction, that play is going to be one of those plays that will stay in that reel forever, which is a long time because he's only 22 years old. So But yeah, incredible athleticism. And look, that's, we come to expect those kinds of things out of Anthony Edwards. The rest of it, and the fourth quarter of this game was a great indication of the rest of the things that he is adding to his game, and the polish and the decision-making and the ability to have a shot for any situation that is required. And it's not just going to be raw athleticism. That is what really made the game so impressive for Anthony Edwards and the way that he closed it, because this was a very tight game all the way up until about the 4 minute mark or so of the fourth quarter. It was anybody's game, and Anthony Edwards was the guy in the fourth quarter, and he had a lot of different answers for Utah's defense.
Yeah. All right. So I only have one thought on this, and then I'll let you kind of take it where you want to go. But you know, my guy, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I love him. I think he's a really interesting player. He has 3 steals, 2 blocks last night, and was a plus 26. But what's interesting to me is a team that almost always plays with two bigs on the court was forced to play with no bigs on the court. And one of the things you have to do, McDaniels is always on ball. He's on the perimeter. Well, you bring in Nickeil Alexander-Walker, and I talked about this is why I was so high on him early in the year, is I thought there's interesting lineups that to be mined from Minnesota. They're volatile because of shooting, but if you make your shots with your with those guys, that allows McDaniels now to become a low man, a rim protector. And he had a couple plays last night that were big-time help side blocks, which he's more of an on-ball block shot guy. So I just thought that was an interesting wrinkle of being able to give Nickeil Alexander-Walker McDaniels' job and give Jaden McDaniels Rudy Gobert's job, so to speak. And at least in this one game against the tanking team, let's not go too far. At least in this one game, it seems to have been a positive.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNADS.com.
Listen, I was so impressed watching them last night with the number of plays that were made in the paint. Right. At the last second, when it looked like Utah was going to have something good at the rim, and the number of plays that were made. I mean, they gave Edwards 2 blocks, and he had 3. He missed one. They gave him, I guess they gave him a deflection or something on one of them, but it was clearly a block shot, so they missed one there. McDaniels made a couple of plays at the rim. Kyle Anderson made plays late, and these are plays that are made by your wing players and your forwards who are helping out in the paint. As you're shorthanded, no Gobert, no Towns. You had all this size, and now it's nowhere to be found. And Naz Reid gets hurt in the game. So you've got no size out there. So to have your forwards with some length and athletic and great instincts, by the way, also, it takes that. The number of plays they disrupted for the Jazz at the end of a pretty good possession when they were about to get something good at the rim, I completely agree with you. They were so active in the number of plays that they made defensively in this game. Yeah, super, super impressed with their defense because Utah played pretty well. They played hard, but Minnesota was able to hang on and get this one.
I like the Oso Blanco in the chat here. Adam hoarding my guys. It's true. This is what I do, Legs. I got Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Jaime Jaquez, Trey Murphy.
Listen, I'm thinking, so for your golf, for your dream golf foursome,
yeah, right,
you got yourself. It sounds like Isaiah Hartenstein's got a spot in that golf cart.
He's my guy.
Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I think, is in the other cart. And the only thing I can't figure out is who's the fourth guy. I was thinking maybe it's Jokic, but that's too easy. Then I was thinking, you know who I think it ultimately should be? Any second-round pick, because I know how much you love those second-round picks. Because Right. So any second round pick in history can grab that fourth spot in your dream four spot.
You're throwing him off. That might be your best joke of the show. I like it. I'll take Jaime Jaquez, though. Jaime Jaquez will be my fourth guy there. Real quick in the chat, let's get to the super chat. I know we usually use those for the later in the show, but I know this one that came in was about this game, or at least about Utah. They asked, your opinion, if Utah should trade Lauri Markkanen or not, their rookies have potential, but it's clear they need time. We've talked about this before. It seems like every time we talk Utah, this is the question people want answered. But is there an updated perspective on what you see from Utah?
Yeah, it's kind of strange, right? Because that was a lot of talk early, and then they started playing really well. I mean, they were the hottest team in the league at one point, and all that talk went away. And now you look up, and they're not going to finish the season that way. And so now that all that kind of conversation is reinvented. I wouldn't trade him. I don't know why you would trade him. Why would you want to trade Lauri Markkanen? I just don't understand. What do you think you're going to get back for Lauri Markkanen that's necessarily going to be better? He's young. He's versatile. He plays hard. He can rebound his position. He's a multi-platform scorer. I don't know what exactly it is you're looking for. What you need are more guys on that caliber around him to really challenge in the Western Conference. But I don't know that you're going to be better off by trading him and going in a rebuild or going in a different direction. Look, maybe down the road you would be, but I don't know. I think they're closer than that to being like a team that's at least competitive and a playoff team in the Western Conference. So I don't know that I would consider trading him. I watch him play and I think, man, you're lucky you have him. So I don't know where you would go with that. You'd go in a total rebuild mode? Is that really what Utah fans would want to do? I just don't understand that.
Well, what's interesting, too, is the implication of that question is, you know, the timeline doesn't work. Well, that only implies that Lowry would leave. It's possible. Lowry's a guy that has bounced around in the NBA so far. Sure. He might be looking for stability. I mean, we all know switching different cities and all that stuff, that's not fun. And I think Utah probably has these conversations or will have those conversations over the summer of, hey, it doesn't look like we can turn the ship around in 1 year. But, you know, you stick around for 2, 3, 4 years. You make this a home. Maybe it's a 5, 6, 7. Maybe this is just where your career, you know, you become a Utah guy. And at that point, we are going to slow build the right way, build around you. And he's young enough that 2 years from now is not that far away to say, hey, build the culture, be the first guy in, and it'll pay off eventually. And this becomes your team, and you're thought of as the Utah Jazz guy of this era. And maybe he's into that. So I think we always assume players are like 3 years each market and then they leave, but Lowry might not be one of those guys.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com. You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Let's quickly hit some of these other games here. I did not catch these ones, but want to just kind of throw off some of the results to you. The Cavs are the other hot team in the Eastern Conference, and they beat the Pacers 108-103. Just the outcome of this game feels somewhat meaningful to me. No Donovan Mitchell in it, but do you take anything away from this win?
It's a great win for the Cavs. Beating him without Donovan Mitchell in a team
in Indiana.
And a team that you know can get up and down the floor, put a lot of pressure on you. They want this thing to be a track meet. You hold them to 103 points at home in their building. It really speaks directly to kind of what the identity of the Cavs is, which is never going to be about Donovan Mitchell scoring. You need him against those top teams in the East. If you see the Bucks, you see the Celtics, you see one of those teams, you're going to need Donovan Mitchell's firepower because he can get shots that nobody else in that roster can get for himself at key times. Yeah. But that's not their identity. That's not ultimately what's going to keep them in games and increase their margin for error. That's their defense, and it was on display against the Pacers last night.
The 76ers beat the Heat last night, 98-91. The Heat continue to just not look impressive. You think it's their time to turn it on and start going? Not the case. Bam has 20-13-6. But Philadelphia, who has not had a lot of feel-good wins, this one has to feel a little bit like a feel-good win.
especially against that team. Yes, because they've been a little bit of a nemesis. They've been a nemesis for the Sixers for a while. And also there's some juice around this now because it seems like there's been an uptick in the conversation about Joel Embiid. And, you know, progress looks good ahead of schedule. You're hearing some of these things, very promising stuff. That can create a sense of buoyancy in your locker room, right? We're just, hey, man, let's just hold on here. And we're getting back probably what would be the greatest X factor to add to your team this late in the season in the history of the Eastern Conference. You get back a guy that was probably going to be the MVP of the league with about five games left in the regular season. And by the way, the standings are very, you know, up and down. They, in a given night, all kinds of stuff is happening with these teams switching places. But you know, you're talking about getting Embiid back. Right now they're in sixth, two games back of Orlando for five, only a half game ahead of Indiana and one game ahead of Miami for the play-in. So every one of these matter. And you're talking about potentially getting him back at the end of the year. And that would be very interesting. And I'm not going to make any predictions of what that would mean because I'd have to see him first. I'd have to see what kind of shape he's in. How many minutes can he play? That's a massive difference to the way you play offensively. Like, can you maintain flow bringing him back? So there's a lot of questions before we start talking about what that would mean. But the fact that it's floating out there, Adam, I think is something that kind of can carry the Sixers, like their spirit right now while they're trying to wait this out and get him back because obviously it's been a tough road since he went out.
And by the way, last night, the 76ers could have woken up this morning in the 8 seed. For the first time this season, instead, they get the win. The Pacers and the Heat both lose, and so you maintain that half and full game advantage over them. But if you were to look at right now, Magic, 76ers, Pacers, Heat, which one of those which two of those four teams do you think make it in to the playoffs, and which one do you think falls to the play-in?
I think the Magic, like they've been consistent enough for me. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point because these other teams have been anything but consistent.
Yeah,
and then I don't think Philadelphia's going to be able to hold on to that, waiting this thing out for Embiid. You're talking about 68. You're talking about like another 8-9 games probably before you would see him. That's going to be very difficult for them. So it comes down to Indiana and Miami, and they're basically deadlocked. I probably would give the nod to the Heat.
Man, that'll be a very exciting. Those three teams, Philly, Pacers, and Heat. That'll be really exciting to watch because those ones are going to go – they're going to flip-flop a whole bunch here. And I'm with you on the 76ers, man. I mean, they have these sparks last night. Maxey has these games like he did last night where you go – and I was expecting it. When Embiid went down, if you remember, we talked about it. I said, hey, this is a chance for Maxey to really break out into his own. Hasn't quite been the case, you know, that he's been able to elevate them and keep them in that spot. Maybe he can do that for another 2 weeks just until Embiid gets back. Let's quickly preview, though, the game tonight. The first of three matchups between the Nuggets and the Timberwolves to close out the year. You look at the standings, and those two teams are tied right now for the 2 seed out west and at one half game behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. So 1, 2, or 3 all on the table, even 4 on the table, to be honest, with the Clippers back there. But these two teams playing each other 3 times, starting with tonight, just feels really big. What are you looking for in this game?
This is huge, man. This is massive. I can't wait. I'm glad. It's only 5 games tonight, so it's a light slate. I got to do TV work in the morning, but this is going to be the entire talking point for me. The only other game I'm kind of interested in is Mavericks Spurs because I want to see if Dallas can keep playing well, and then you always want to watch Wemby. So there's only 2 games worth watching tonight, and there's only one that really matters in the standings and affecting that, and that's Nuggets Timberwolves. There's a lot at stake. First of three, Anthony Edwards has been sensational here lately. 3 straight wins. He's over 30, averaging 33 in those 3 wins, over 50% in each of those games from the field. He is just playing at an incredible level right now, like comfortable. Everything he's doing looks easy right now. And that's kind of what I want to watch. Can he do that and operate that way against the Nuggets? Now, I don't know. Did you hear anything about Naz Reid today? I didn't look at the status report, but is he expected to play tonight? Because
I think
that's going to be a problem for Minnesota.
So I texted my guy, my Timberwolves guy the other day and said he has a concussion, so that rules him out. They called it a head injury and they haven't, you know, said anything. But if it's a concussion, if they rule it, which they have not formally, if they rule it by league, he's going to have to be out. Yeah. So we'll probably get that update. I kind of expect him not to play. Gobert missed this last game against Utah, actually last two, I believe, with a rib injury. But I expected last night he was listed as questionable, and oftentimes when there's a back-to-back, the front end of the players listed as questionable, I just feel like that means he'll play the second night. It's like, hey, there's 2 games. We're going to play him one. This one's more important. Look, this game's really important to both teams. Minnesota falling to the three seed after the year they've had, it just would feel like a little bit of a gut punch, even with the injury and everything else. So I think that this is going to be one of those games. And the Nuggets just played Dallas. It was over the weekend. It was a great game, came down to the wire. I felt like Denver was a little more lackadaisical in that game than they have been in a lot of these marquee matchups post All-Star break. I expect the Nuggets to be in fifth gear tonight. I expect an A-plus effort from them because they know that they can really do some damage in these three matchups that they have with each other. So I think it's going to be played at a high level. And even though Minnesota's shorthanded, Anthony Edwards, a big game player, I think Jaden McDaniels, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, they get up for this matchup because they're required. This is their chance to shine. Go shut down Jamal Murray. You're going to be on ESPN for that. So I think that this is going to be a phenomenally played game with a lot of intensity, but I just expect Denver to win based on the fact that Minnesota is so shorthanded.
I want to see who's the bigger impact player in this one, McDaniels or Michael Porter Jr. I think that's going to be a big tipping point in the game. Michael Porter Jr. has been playing great. We know that since the All-Star break. He's just been on a serious roll. Yep. You know, you've been saying all year, even when the Nuggets went through that little spell where they weren't playing particularly well, we talk about them all the time, on and off the air. And you've been saying all along, Minnesota was the team like you were looking at because of their size and the different challenge that they can present for Jokic that you were concerned about. Well, there's a chance if Naz Reid doesn't play, even if he does, like, I mean, he's a big guy, but he's not, it's not the same as Gobert in town.
Different. Yeah.
So if he doesn't play, you know, we were thinking, you know, you could get Jokic versus Gobert, Towns, Reed. Nope, you might get a lot of Luka Garza against Nikola Jokic is what you might end up with. So we might not be able to fully see the nuances of what you're talking about, because I think that's what I was looking forward to tonight. Like, how does it affect Jokic in any way differently than any other team? Because I'm on record as saying he is unfazed. He's unaffected by whatever is put in front of him, but there's got to be slight differences that teams can present. And Minnesota on paper looks like they had that. And if they're that shorthanded, it might be tough to get that feel from the game tonight. But that's why, look, I think Denver was all in against Dallas. And you could tell by Michael Malone's emotion and the way he got on his team. He's screaming at them, you know, coming up for their timeout by getting rebounds. And they were all in. They played hard. They wanted to win the game. And Dallas was able to get that on a ridiculous buzzer beater by Kyrie. There's no doubt in my mind Denver's going to be all in this one too, regardless of who Minnesota has out there. So that's why I'm actually looking at it more from Anthony Edwards and the Timberwolves. Like, if they're able to put up a fight, even if they lose the game, if this is a one-possession game, 2 minutes to go, and they've played it a certain way, a certain level of physicality, that's going to be something that could be a very good positive sign for the Timberwolves when you talk about a postseason run.
Well, I think the thing I'm looking for is Nikhil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels. I think they are two of the better Jamal Murray defenders out there. And even though you don't have that back line, you know, if Gobert's guarding Jokic, it's a little bit less rim protection, which I expect tonight. You know, Gobert guarding Jokic in isolation, less effective than Gobert guarding as a help side guy. And they're probably not going to have the luxury of doing that tonight. But if even without Gobert patrolling the paint and playing off, I still think that those guys are great on-ball defenders, and I think Jamal Murray is going to try to give them the business tonight. So whether win or loss, I just want to see how does Jamal Murray fare against those two long, rangy defenders, because I think that'll be the thing that you mine from this one and say, okay, that's indicative of what we're going to expect if these teams match up.
And one last thing about Minnesota, they had a couple of sneaky little acquisitions here, guys that are playing, and they have little moments in the games, right? T.J. Warren, Monte Morris, like both of those guys, they're pros. They're pros, and they're ready to go to have a spot. So be interesting to see if one of those guys has an unexpected, you know, 12 or 15-point game tonight, because Minnesota's going to need some extra offense if Naz Reid is not able to play.
Yeah. All right, cue that outro music. Emma, legs, we got a lot of news coverage, man, covered today.
I'll be texting you tonight when that game's on, hopefully to give us a good one.
Going to be an absolutely great one. And then tomorrow night, so we don't have a show tomorrow, but we will be back on Thursday, and we have Heat Cavs, which is another great game. So we'll probably be breaking down Nuggets Timberwolves, even though it's a day late. We'll be breaking down Heat Cavs. And then, you know, the marquee game we're really going to be breaking down, Bucks Celtics, is on Wednesday. We're going to be talking that one on Thursday. That's one of the biggest games of the year. Everybody, thanks for hanging out with us. We really appreciate you watching this live on YouTube. We do this every day. Usually at 1 o'clock Eastern time, but some for a little bit early. Just check YouTube. You'll see, hit the little alarm button and it'll alert you when we go live. But also do us a favor and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Even if you watch the show live, it helps us out when you subscribe to that show, because it tells Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else, hey, this is a show people are enjoying, and they push it to other people who might like it. So we appreciate it. Everybody do us a favor, hit that like button on the way out. We'll see you Thursday.